This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. Let's say you had a boatload of money and you want to go to Atlanta for the Super Bowl and you just want to buy a ticket, but you want a good value. You don't mind paying the high prices, but you want to save some dollars like all good consumers do. So which matchup this weekend do you need to avoid? Well, according to the ticket brokering community, the matchup in the Super Bowl that is going to draw the most dollars. Now, you'd think it would be New England, right? Because the Patriots and, you know, it is going to be Kansas City against the New Orleans Saints. If we get that matchup, Patrick Mahomes against Drew Brees in the Super Bowl, ticket prices will go higher than any other matchup that you could possibly put together. Okay. Well, you know, it does stand to reason when you think about it. The Chiefs haven't been to the Super Bowl since 1970. New Orleans, very passionate about their team and would love another, you know, shot at another parade in downtown New Orleans. But that's the matchup you got to be careful for. Walk-in ticket prices at this moment, $3,800. $3,800 if you want to go stand in and grab a ticket on the day of the game.
I would imagine the Saints are the top two, just because they'll travel well. Even if you are in Atlanta, you probably know the Saints very well. And if you're a diehard Falcons fan, you would love to be there to witness them losing.
I thought that when I saw this story and didn't read it, I just saw the headline. My first thought was Patriot Saints, right? Drew Brees against Tom Brady. That would draw the most interest. I totally kind of didn't comprehend the Chiefs, and I should have figured the Chiefs' lack of Super Bowl appearances and being the first one for a lot of people in their lifetime should have been higher than the Patriots, who are going to go to their, Brady would be his ninth. That would be 11th with the 11th Super Bowl.
If we're to assume the Patriots go to the Super Bowl, right?
Right.
And then we also assume that, you know, the Super Bowl, since it is in Atlanta, that a lot of Atlanta residents would end up going to the Super Bowl.
I don't know if it works that way.
Well, I know. But if we were to assume that, how badly would the Patriots be booed?
Oh, a lot, I would think, right?
I mean, 28-3?
Yeah, a lot. Oh, of course. 28-3 2 years ago? Absolutely. No kidding. Yeah, $3,800 is the stand-in ticket right now to get into Super Bowl 53. A lot of cheddar.
Every day can't be hat day.
Take off your hat.
Stop worrying about your hairline today by visiting forhims.com/cheer. That's forhims.com/cheer. This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
AFC-NFC Championship Games. All right, Drew Brees and Tom Brady, the old guard, Jared Goff, Patrick Mahomes, the new young guard. Brees versus Brady, I think, would be a great matchup. Just two legacy quarterbacks. I've told you all week that I do think Drew Brees, for all of his records, for all of the numbers that he's put up in his career, I do think he needs a second Super Bowl. I don't think it's something that's going to prevent him from going to the Hall of Fame or anything stupid like that. But I do think, and it would be just to complete a career, to put him on another level of, he's got all these marks and two championships. That seems to be where we want our huge quarterbacks, the ones that are on the upper echelon. We want them to have two championships. That's why it's hard with Marino not to have any.
Yeah, it would throw him into, you know, the no-brainer. He's a top 10 quarterback of all time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like we just automatically, you know, we know he's there. He's supplanted his position.
So, but there is a new blood aspect to the NFL. It's being led by these two young guys in Jared Goff and Patrick Mahomes. If they put on the kind of show that we saw during the regular season in the Super Bowl would be legendary. It would go down in history as one of the best shows of Super Bowls that we've seen. And we've seen last second field goals. We've seen fantastic performances. We've seen utter dominations. But if they put on the same kind of show Monday night, I think that would go down in Super Bowl history as one of the best Super Bowls of all time. Tough to say. Basically, you know, there's a lot of Super Bowls to choose from, but I think it would be right up there. But nevertheless, this old guard of Brees versus Brady has an interesting appeal to me. Look, I know America is not rooting for the Patriots. I know Tom Brady, and it's sort of an old thing. We get to see it all the time, right? We don't want to see him go to their third one. But just hear me out for a little bit. Imagine Brady and Brees. Imagine those two playing on the stage, two 40-year-old quarterbacks playing in the Super Bowl. You know, I know some of you old, younger guys may not appreciate this, but older guys would. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good accomplishment. That's not a bad show to have two 40-year-old quarterbacks playing for the championship of the National Football League, and especially the two legendary players who don't get to meet every year. They play once every four. They don't get to see, you know, play against each other. I think this would be great. But I don't want to diminish what I'm seeing with Sean McVay and the Rams. That is a fun offense to watch. Todd Gurley, Jared Goff, that is a fun offense to watch. Same with Patrick Mahomes and his bevy of weapons, right? All of the guys, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, you name it. All of the guys that have contributed to what the Chiefs do, that's fun as well. I loved the Monday night matchup. I know the detractors were pointing to that game and said, no defense. Come on, we got to get some defense. It can't have an, and this isn't arena football. But I liked it. I was energized by it. I was entertained by it. If you give it to me in the Super Bowl, I'll take it. I don't care if the score is 55-52. I don't care. If I have one day where that's the kind of Super Bowl I get, great. Good. Yeah. I'd love it. I'd love it.
At this point in the season, would we want... If we were wanting that scenario, would we want it to be more Chiefs-Saints or Chiefs-Rams?
Yeah, that's a good question. That is a good question.
Because obviously we're not. If you want high-flying, you know, theatrics, you're not getting it from the Patriots. You're gonna get what you always get from the Patriots, which is, you know, methodical scoring. You know, they're not a team. I don't see them being a team that's going to throw up 50 points.
Very hard to see that kind of high flying offense from the Patriots.
But
who are going to try to run the ball and do?
Yeah,
what the
they're
going to
slow
do.
It. Slow the clock down. You know, they're going to do the short underneath passes. You know, they're going to work the field.
And take anything you give them to their advantage, right? Breaking down how defensively they can utilize. I mean, if they've got to throw, they throw. They run. That's kind of what Belichick does. But again, if you're looking for, hey, we want the NFL is going through. We want that to look like that in the Super Bowl. Then you got to take the Patriots out of the equation. Put in the Chiefs and any combination of Rams or Saints. More likely, Rams would get you that kind of level.
You think?
I was leaning more
towards Saints because the Rams.
Well, both teams average over 30 points a game, so it's one half dozen or the other.
Yeah, but I was saying, without Cooper Kupp, I think the Rams would be lacking.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So that would.
But the same thing, on the same token, though, when the Chiefs did that, they had Kareem Hunt. So who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? So we should see.
That would just be fun.
Did you see the story in the NBA? The Knicks and the Wizards played in London, England yesterday, but Enes Kanter, the center for the Knicks, he did not go. Did you see this?
Yes.
He could not go because there is the country of Turkey has issued an international arrest warrant for him. They are accusing him of having links to a group that was blamed for a failed coup against the current president back in 2016. I can't believe I just put that sentence together about an NBA player.
No, because if you told me that story, yeah, if you had told me that story, I would have said you're giving me the new plot line for a James Bond movie.
Oh, absolutely, right? A guy playing in the NBA but secretly been working behind the scenes to overthrow the government and a country's president. Now, forgive me, I'm not familiar with Turkey and their political system. I don't know, is this guy a ruthless dictator? And that's what Enes Kanter has been speaking out against. I would assume that's the case. But an international arrest warrant had been issued for him. He could not go. He didn't want to go. He said, I could be killed if I went over there. He has described the Turkish government as a dictator. Okay. I'm assuming that would be true. And Cantor thought he had a very good chance of being killed while he was over there with the Knicks, despite security of the NBA teams when they do go to places like London or anywhere else that they play basketball games at.
Right, I'm not trying to get political, but isn't Turkey an ally? Like, don't we have a base there?
I thought so. Don't we have missiles there? I don't know if we do or not.
I don't either. I think we always, like, you know, it's our, like, our gateway to the Middle East.
Exactly.
That we use Turkey. So,
Cantor was meeting with Senator Marco Rubio about this, standing up for human rights, freedom, and democracy. But the fact that an NBA player couldn't go to an international game because there's an international arrest warrant for him. Now, I don't know what that means. I don't know if that would be like as soon as he stepped foot in London or stepped foot in England off the plane, they could arrest him. Or, you know, or does England go, arrest him? No, that's your problem. No,
what it probably is that, you know, there's probably people ingrained in England, because it's easier to travel through Europe than it is to get to the United States, that somebody would find their hotel and then in the middle of the night snatch him.
Yeah, no, I mean
that's what
arresting
I'm thinking. That's what I'm saying. Well, like, they would come in the middle of the night and you know, take him then.
But you would need the country's permission to do that, right? Like, that's kidnapping. That's not arrest.
So arrest would be
The British government saying, yes, if there's an international arrest warrant and he is on our grounds, go get him.
That's why this needs to be the next James Bond movie, so
yes,
we can find out what would happen.
Dun, dun, dun. But instead, make Enes Kanter like a villain, because that's how you'd want it, right?
No, he's not the villain. He's almost like, you know, James Bond was hired to protect him.
Protect him, okay.
But
he got
snatched anyways.
That's right.
And then
that's
he has to go after and go get him.
What a bizarre story.
What
a bizarre story.
Can that happen in any other sport? I guess it could happen in Major League Baseball.
I guess it could. Did anybody on the Yankees and the Red Sox have international arrest warrants against them so that they can't go to London and play the baseball game? Man, how does this... Does he live in fear in the United States of somebody doing the same thing? When he says, I could be killed there, well, does he live in fear that it could happen here too?
Apparently
somebody
not.
Could just come in and... If what he fears, if the people that he fears would kill him, why couldn't they get him in New York?
Yeah, well, because you got to imagine that there's supporters here in Turkey or from supporters of Turkey in the United States now.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, we can't be blind to think that that's not true.
I don't know how to pronounce his name. But anyway, since the coup happened against him in 2016, listen to this. 77,000 people have been detained and are awaiting trial, according to Reuters. Woo. Additionally, 150,000 Turkish government employees, including judges, teachers, and soldiers, have been suspended or fired for what many analysts have classified as a purge of any political opposition. So this is what he's fighting against. And he couldn't play Knicks basketball yesterday in London because of it. That's a very bizarre story.
Yeah, it is.
I hear that every day.
I'm excited for the movie.
I want the book to come out. I want the movie to come out.
Do you want to read the book first, or do you want to watch the movie and then, you know, follow up with the book to figure out the details missed?
Yeah. Now Marco Rubio said that what Cantor is accused of is ridiculous. What if he's wrong? What if Cantor was secretly working with an organization to overthrow the Turkish president?
You know he is. He has to.
Right?
He has to be. That's what makes the story better.
That's what makes the story better. That he is this guy. He is part of this underground revolution in Turkey or whatever it is that had this failed coup against their president in 2016. And then he was like, okay, I'm going to go play basketball. I'm going to go play in the NBA, but never forget, I'm a phone call away if you need me.
This will be the next James Bond musical. Be a hybrid of James Bond movie and Les Miserables.
That's right.
Viva la Revolution.
I'll be paying attention to this. I had no idea this happened until like 2 days ago. I had no idea.
So basically, he can't go anywhere, right?
He can't go anywhere. I mean,
like he's going to be making a lot of trips to Disney.
I got to think. All right, 800-777-2907. All right, coming up next, could our favorite minor league baseball player actually make it to the majors? The general manager of the Mets had an interesting thing to say about that at his next on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, when it gets cold out there, your vehicle needs some extra attention. O'Reilly Auto Parts has everything you need to keep your vehicle toasty warm. From choosing the right antifreeze for your engine to replacing your windshield wiper blades, that's important. O'Reilly will get your vehicle in fighting shape for the cold weather ahead. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Windshield wiper replacement is so important. There's nothing worse than when you can't get the ice, when the ice starts melting and you can't scrape it off properly, or there's that gap. You have no idea what I'm talking about because you lived in warm weather your whole life. That moment when the defrost of the ice on your car and you go to the windshield wipers and it goes, and it's like there's this big gap because your windshield wipers stink. Oh, you got to change them.
I've heard that's a problem.
It is a problem.
Yeah.
It is a problem. I got in an accident years ago. I was living in Colorado and I was living in Denver and I was working in Colorado Springs until we could move down there. And, my wife told me, she said, tomorrow morning, there's going to be snow. Take my car. Her car was better equipped for snow driving. She said, take my car down. I want you. And I said, okay. I didn't. I wanted to drive my car. I liked my car. But I defrosted the car and I was like, eh, what the heck? I'll just drive out. I was driving at 3:30 in the morning down to Colorado Springs. I got out and I could barely see. And my car slipped on ice and I ran into a stop sign and the airbag came out and it wasn't that bad of a crash, but my wife still to this day says you should have taken my car. It was better for snow. A lot of it was because the windshield wiper and the heater and the fact that it drove better. My car was, I needed some stuff done to it. So don't be like me. Go to O'Reilly, get your stuff taken care of this winter. Don't crash. Because even though I had to get it towed, and then they fined me for they gave me a fine for busting up a stop sign. It wasn't a stop sign. I'm sorry. It was one of those divide signs. It was one of those signs that shows you that there's going to be a divide in a median. Yeah, that's right, in the middle of the road. So it wants to remind you like, hey, over here is a big huge bump and. Yeah, that's in the middle of the road. That's what I crashed into.
How much does it cost to replace one of the median signs?
I think it was less than $200 that I was fined for that. Yeah, and nobody got hurt. No, I didn't get hurt. I ended up going back to work. You know, I was down there and got back to work. But man, it was just a hassle. I had to get the car towed. I had to get my wife's car. I had to boogie down there. So it stunk.
But the most important thing that you said is that still to this day.
Yeah, she still reminds
me. She still reminds you, because that's what a good wife does.
Yeah, she says, oh, yeah, like the time you didn't take my car down to Colorado Springs like I told you to when you got in that car accident.
And they're able to work that. She's able to work that in any conversation, right?
Yeah, any conversation.
I mean, you guys could be talking about, having meatloaf.
Yeah.
And she's like, exactly. Oh, yeah, about that time I told you to take my car. And you're like sitting there like, how did we get there, and why does that make sense to our conversation right now?
That was like 15 years ago, and she'll still every now and then remind me.
It's the wizardry of women.
That's right, exactly.
That they're able to pull something like that and just bring it into a conversation. You're like, okay, and I try to do that, and I can't.
No, there's nothing you can do. Tim Tebow will be back at the Mets Major League camp in Port St. Lucie. He was there last year. But does he have a chance to make the Major League roster at some point this season? Likely will go into AAA, likely not start the year with the Mets. But here is what new Mets general manager said on a local radio show in New York.
Man, I got my fingers crossed for this.
Come Listen on. To this. He said, if we somehow suffer an injury and needed somebody to replace Brandon Nimmo or Michael Conforto in the starting lineup, and if Tim Tebow is the best offensive player in AAA at that point, he's going to be in the lineup.
Call Tonya Harding.
That doesn't say much. It just says if he's the best player. But I think that's a wink, wink. Let's get Tim Tebow rolling. Yeah, let's call Tonya Harding. Let's get some players hurt so Tim Tebow can play in the majors. If he plays in the majors, what? Doesn't everybody owe him an apology?
Of course.
For this stunt that he's pulling on America by being a baseball player, professional baseball player?
Come on, America, we need to make the Miss Universe a baseball wife.
Exactly. She can't be riding around in Binghamton, Scranton. These are fine towns. Don't get me wrong for those of you who live there. But you know what I mean.
She needs to be in Flushing.
She needs to be like in Cincinnati for a 3-game set over the weekend against the Reds. Right? By the way, cute pictures of the newlywed couple, engaged couple at Disney World.
Of course.
Mickey and Mickey just get married ears. Well done, Tebow. Tebow knows how to play America well. Doesn't he?
He's just a kid.
Great.
He's just having a good time. Oh, and yes, goodness, if he makes the major league roster, we all owe him an apology.
Yeah, we do, because I thought it was a stupid
Not me, though, because
stunt.
I always thought he would make it.
You did, right? Oh, my goodness. He was there at Major League Camp last year, and the Mets basically sold out all their spring training games. I don't know if that has anything to do with Tebow or not. Do they not sell out their spring training games? They're a pretty popular New York team in Florida.
What was that, Port St. Lucie?
Port St. Lucie? Lucy?
Is it Lucy or Lucci?
I think it's Port St. Lucie.
I don't know. I'm throwing a little tie-in on that, I guess.
Who knows? The only thing I know about it is it's where the Mets practice in the early spring.
Yeah, does that town know for anything else?
No, I don't. I wouldn't know. Somebody could argue that it's, the sponge capital of the world or something like that. I would have no idea. He batted .244 in 210 minor league games so far in his baseball career. Last season, he suffered a broken hand. Remember that?
Yeah.
Could have been called up by the Mets.
He was going to be called up.
He was going to be called up by the Mets.
He was in the All-Star game.
He was in the All-Star game playing for Binghamton.
They were ready to call him up.
Well, the Mets, I got to look this up. I got to find out the Mets AAA team that he would go to. I thought they had one in Vegas, but I think it's
Clearwater.
Maybe. I'm going to look it up right now because I got to find out where his new bride is going to go. AAA team for the Mets. Because if he's going to be in AAA, where would that be? AAA Syracuse.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
I think it's Syracuse. Oh, he's going to stay in the Northeast.
Yeah. They're going to be buried under snow.
Yeah. It was Las Vegas. He could have gone to Vegas. How great would that
be? No, actually, Vegas doesn't play Tebow.
No, you don't think so?
That's not a good spot
Sin
for
City.
Him. No, because he wouldn't take advantage of it. You wouldn't see TMZ popping up with some mysterious video of Tim Tebow late night in a casino somewhere. You wouldn't see that
right before his wedding.
Yeah, you wouldn't see that. He would be treating Vegas terribly.
In all seriousness, though, I got to give credit to this guy. I mean, I really do. I know. Listen, it's one thing to get the opportunity, and people were like, "Hey, come on, Mets, this is silly." But he has performed well enough to get noticed. Like last year, he did pretty well, enough to be an all-star. That wasn't a joke. That wasn't a publicity stunt. He had legitimate numbers to be an all-star at the AA level. Now, people who know that the AA gap to the AAA gap is pretty wide. I mean, it's not as wide as AAA to major leagues, but it's pretty wide. You can go from single A to double A pretty quickly. Double A to triple A, it takes a little bit of work. And then obviously to get to the majors is another level. But if he does, if the Mets bring him up, the joke's on us. I mean, those of us who thought this was a stupid stunt to stay relevant, to stay in the news, right? To stay where the broadcasting wasn't enough, right? Being on the SEC network wasn't enough, or Good Morning America, whatever he was doing wasn't enough, actually would come through fruition. If he plays for the Mets for 10 games, let's say, he made it. He becomes a baseball professional, Major League Baseball player, and he becomes written in the history books of Major League Baseball as taking at-bats at that level. And you know what? Laughed at that idea a couple of years ago. Laughed at it. Thought it was stupid. Remember when he didn't know what a batting circle he was supposed to go to? Remember all that? Like when he first started and he looked silly against like Max Scherzer
and that's why he was perfect for the Mets, because the Mets do things like that.
Yeah, of course.
They don't train their guys on the basics.
It seems like, again, there's no other team in the majors that would have been perfect fit for Tebow than the Mets.
No, but
you're right. They don't train them on how to do things right.
If we compare athletes who excelled in one sport, then dished it for another, I mean, the only one that comes to my mind is Michael Jordan at this point. And Tim Tebow is far better, a much better baseball player than Michael Jordan was.
Yeah. Michael Jordan was getting better, but he was not. I don't think he was an all-star, was he?
No, I don't think he was ever close to being an all-star.
I don't think he was.
I mean, yeah, he was getting better, but, you know, let's face it. I mean, you know, Tebow has proved the doubters wrong already. I don't care. He does at this point. I don't even know if he needs to make the major league roster. I think that's the perfect ending to the story. But I don't think he needs to make it because he's proven that he can hang.
Think about this: if you go to a minor league baseball game that Tim Tebow is playing in this year, you are likely to see him and a former Miss Universe at your little stadium on Taco Tuesday night or Bring Your Dog to the Park night or anything like that. It is possible you will get to do some cool little minor league promotion and see the former Miss Universe and Tim Tebow.
Yeah, Burn Your Disco Record night.
Yeah, Burn Your Disco Record night or Netflix and Chill night. Oops, I didn't realize what that actually meant. I think that was the Binghamton Rumble Ponies that put together the Netflix and Chill Night, and then somebody went, that's not what, no, that's not what it means.
It's not about being cold. Yeah.
Netflix and Chill in my house is me and my wife arguing which movie to watch and then just settling down due to the argument. That's Netflix and Chill at my house.
You caving.
SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
It is time for one of my favorite segments that we're doing because in celebration of the greatest sporting event in America, the Super Bowl, we do Super Bowl Rewind on this date in Super Bowl history. It's January 18th. What the cool thing is we're getting some older Super Bowls now because this is when the Super Bowl used to be played. And then we pushed it way down the calendar. Once we got the 16 games on the schedule, and then we just kind of extended it a little bit, we get all the way down to the 20s. And when we do, Ron, we're going to do Super Bowl dates that have like three Super Bowls attached to them we get down to the 20s and in the Februarys.
Yeah, give it 20 more years. Yeah. And the Super Bowl will give way to March Madness.
Yeah, exactly. You'll be right into March, right? It'll be right into March. So on this date in Super Bowl history, Super Bowl X. Now, we talked about the Patriots, right? Before the Patriots, there were the Steelers, who won four Super Bowls in 6 years. This was their second straight Super Bowl. So they were not dynastic yet, because we had seen multiple Super Bowl championships from the Green Bay Packers early. We saw it with the Miami Dolphins. So we hadn't quite got the dynasty yet for Pittsburgh, but it certainly helped. They beat the Dallas Cowboys 21-17. Chuck Knoll and Tom Landry. The game was played at the Orange Bowl in Miami. The MVP of the game was Lynn Swann. Who had a touchdown. It's one of those touchdown catches you kind of see on NFL films.
Yeah, the one where he's kind of going down the sideline. Yeah.
Yep, you get that. He had the 64-yard touchdown from Bradshaw that game in the fourth quarter, and the Steelers won 21-17 in that game. And that happened on this date in, I think it was 1976. On this date, the Steelers were favored in this game by 10 points, and they won back-to-back championships. You know who was the halftime show of this game? Up With People.
Up With People.
Remember Up With People, the little student band group or whatever they were?
Not really. That was before my time.
Yeah, there used to be a group called Up With People. I don't know if they're still around, where they would get like young people who could sing and do some, and they would. They were a Super Bowl halftime show back in the day. Pat Summerall and Tom Brookshire, Hank Stram were the announcers for the Super Bowl on CBS. That got a rating of 42.5. It's pretty good. But this is the Steelers again. They became the Patriots. In a few years, they would be what the Patriots are now, right? People sick of them. Then Super Bowls a lot. 4 out of 6. Pretty amazing. Terry Bradshaw, Lynn Swann, John Stallworth, the Steel Curtain defense, Chuck Knoll. Right. This is the start of the Steeler dynasty, but winning Super Bowl X. This would be one of three times that the Steelers and the Cowboys would meet in the Super Bowl. The Steelers also beat the Cowboys in Super Bowl 13, and then they also lost to them in Super Bowl 30. That's the famous game of Neil O'Donnell throwing two interceptions to Larry Brown, and both of them where no Steeler is in anywhere near Larry Brown whatsoever.
That's when the fix was on, right?
Yeah, that's when everybody believed Neil O'Donnell fixed the game. Well, at least those of us on the massive conspiracy side of the Super Bowl that couldn't understand how you don't run the Cowboys defense down with Bam Morris in the last part of that game. Instead, you're flinging it with Neil O'Donnell, who's like, where's the Cowboy? Where's the Cowboy? Where's the Cowboy? Oh, there he is, who's not covering anybody. Here, Larry Brown, who's got the MVP. How do you get an interception when you're nowhere near a Steeler? Shouldn't defensively you be near a Steeler
probably
to get an interception? If you're getting an interception and there's no Steeler around you, that means you're not covering anybody, right? Is that the logical conclusion I can make? Or somebody's going to remind me, oh, no, they played this kind of zone defense. Okay, fine. But nevertheless, it still makes me bitter.
Oh, it should.
Oh, because the Steelers were trailing big in that game. Game.
You can get mad at Larry Brown for being, you know, just in occupying an area, but I mean, what was O'Donnell thinking?
Yeah, there was nobody around. There wasn't anybody around.
It was almost as if he forgot what jersey he was wearing.
That Super Bowl, one of the reasons that Super Bowl hurt so badly is because the Cowboys were crushing them. I mean, absolutely crushing them. It was at one point 20-7. And it was like, oh, this is going nowhere. This is the Steelers couldn't stop the Cowboys. At one time, it was 13-0. And Yancey Thigpen's caught a touchdown, but it still didn't look like the Steelers were in the game. And then all of a sudden, the Steelers did some stuff. They scored on a field goal. They got the ball back on this cool onside kick. And then Bam Morris scored a touchdown in the fourth quarter that cut the lead to 3. And then the Steelers had the ball back. And with a chance to take the lead in the game late. And that's when Larry Brown got the interception. And that led to Emmitt Smith scoring on a 4-yard touchdown to make the game a 10-point game. But the Steelers had the ball with a chance to take the lead in the Super Bowl. Super Bowl they had trailed for most of the game. And instead, Larry Brown gets the interception that sealed the win for the Cowboys. Very hard to take. Tough to take. I didn't mind losing to the Packers a few years ago, but I still can't get over Super Bowl 30.
Yeah,
a lot of it is my, yeah.
The Super Bowl 30 was the one I half watched.
Yeah. Though my brother was a Cowboys fan growing up, and I used to tease him as kids that we had the two Super Bowl victories over the Cowboys, and then he finally got this one. So, nevertheless. I had waited my whole life to get back to the Super Bowl. Like, I was a little kid when they went to the Super Bowl 14 against the Rams, and then I waited all through the 80s and nothing. And I waited through most of the 90s, early 90s, when they had really good football teams, but they would lose to Buffalo or they would lose to the Chargers in the AFC title game. And then they beat Indianapolis. And when they beat Indianapolis, who was Jim Harbaugh's team at the time, Harbaugh threw a Hail Mary that almost got caught in the end zone that would have sent the Colts to that Super Bowl. The ball landed on the stomach of the wide receiver who had fallen to the ground. He had it for a split second, kind of corralled the ball in and then fell, and then had it on his stomach, and then it rolled off of him. And the Steelers won the AFC championship game. But for a brief second, I thought, oh, God, not again. Not again.
But don't you take don't you feel good in the fact that that was the Cowboys' last Super Bowl?
Yeah, I never would have guessed. I never would have guessed. At that time, that's the last time we would have saw the Cowboys in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, because that was a mini dynasty building. I mean, you could have said that team probably would have been better than the Patriots.
Yeah, three or four there.
Given the triplets.
Yep, they beat the Bills twice, took the year off losing to the 49ers for Super Bowl 29, then came back and won Super Bowl 30 with Barry Switzer as the head coach.
Yep.
And that's it. That 1996, January of 96. The last time we saw the Cowboys in the Super Bowl. And there was a time where we were sick of the Dallas Cowboys too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Definitely.
The Cowboys again. We were sick of the Bills more than the Cowboys, but then we were sick of the Cowboys.
But then when the Bills lost their fourth one, we were like, okay, now we're feeling bad for them.
I was feeling horrible for the Bills.
They should get at least one.
I know. I have a friend of mine. She's a huge Buffalo Bills fan, she's like the only Bills fan I know in my life. And I just remember we were in college at the time and she was so devastated. I was like, we're never going to win this. And I'm like, and I wanted to be supportive, but I was like, no, you're not. You're not going to win this. No.
Because it went losing to the Giants, losing to the Cowboys twice, losing to the Niners.
Redskins. Yeah. They lost to Mark Rippon.
Oh, yeah.
And the Redskins.
The great quarterback, Mark Rippon.
If I'm not mistaken, and you can correct me wrong, you can correct me on Twitter at Tony D Radio. I believe that was the Super Bowl 26, that Thurman Thomas lost his helmet and couldn't find it. And he missed like the first play of the game because he forgot his helmet. Oh my God, it's a Super Bowl. You forget your helmet. Just insane.
Well, we saw yesterday that could happen.
Yeah.
You can forget clothing.
Yeah. Michael on Twitter, let's not forget Larry Brown had two interceptions in that game. He did. He did have two interceptions in that game, Michael.
We talked about it.
And he got a big free agent contract by the Raiders. Go figure. I know. Nobody made Larry Brown's career better than Neil O'Donnell. Not Larry Brown, Neil O'Donnell. Let me tell you something. If he had dropped any one of those interceptions, he would have been the laughing stock in Super Bowl history. We would have been playing like the Keystone Cops music in the background, like, and watch Larry Brown get the sure interception that's thrown right to him by Steeler. Whoops! Oh, gotcha! He dropped it.
He would have joined his teammate, Leon Lett.
That's right, Leon Lett, right? Look at Leon Lett rumbling down the sidelines, holding the football out in his hand before he crossed the goal line, and Don Beebe knocked it out.
I was at that Super Bowl.
Were you at that Super Bowl?
I was at Super Bowl 27. It was in Pasadena, and I remember that play vividly because you don't really see it on the cameras, but when you're in the stands, I was looking over, and I was like, man, I couldn't tell who the wide receiver was. Later found out that it was Don Beebe. But I sat there looking. I was like, dude, that guy, I mean, he was, I think, on the – 30-yard line on the opposite side, on the other side of the 50. He was on the 30-40, and he just went into a dead sprint. And could totally see that you're looking at it like he's going to catch him.
It's amazing when you think about that play, because that play became – he became so famous for that play. Like, coaches used it to motivate athletes. Like, look at the hustle. He got the ball out of his hands and turned it into a touchback.
Yep.
Like, how awesome is that? And then he did Don Beebe ended up getting his Super Bowl ring with Green Bay, I think, was the Packers?
I think so, yeah.
I think it was with the Packers.
Well, with Favre.
With Favre. The first one with Favre against the Patriots. But always tied to Buffalo and that play. And that, look, when you're a Bills fan, I'm sure the Super Bowl's hurt, but I always respect Buffalo fans for the way they embrace Scott Norwood after Super Bowl 25. And Beebe is like a folk hero for that play. Just that play. It was a complete annihilation, right? The Cowboys forced nine turnovers.
It was never even a contest. What was it, like 52-17 or something like that? I mean, 52-20 something. It was terrible.
Troy Aikman said he vomited before the game. He felt so much pressure, and he didn't show it at all. He just annihilated. I guess vomiting would be good for the system if it leads to that kind of football performance that Aikman and the Cowboys put on against the Bills in that game. But out of all of that garbage, out of all that embarrassment, Don Beebe's play on Leon Lett is the shining moment for Bills fans who embraced it and have always just treat Don Beebe like gold for the rest of his life for one thing. Maybe other things, of course, but for that one play, you didn't let us down. You didn't embarrass us. You fought and you got the touchback. And, you know, Leon Lett had two of those, right?
What else was I going to say? How funny is it that, you know, two players tied to one play, one becomes a folk hero and the other one... Leon Lett had a decent career. Everyone will forget that Leon Lett had a really good career, but he's always going to be known for two plays. One was that fumble in Super Bowl 27, and the other one, I think it was a Thanksgiving game.
Thanksgiving Day in the snow.
Yeah, against Miami when he decided to go for it was a blocked kick, right?
It was a blocked kick, and he thought the ball was live, and he went for it,
and he touched it.
Because he touched it, the Dolphins could recover.
Yeah, the Dolphins picked it up, and didn't they score?
I don't remember, but I don't know what they did after that. Maybe they did. I don't know. But I do know he touched it. He shouldn't have touched it. The Cowboys should have let it go.
Well, wasn't that he slid into it, tried to get it, and slipped into it.
Awesome.
And touched the ball, which allowed the Dolphins able to recover, and they advanced the ball up to that line.
Exactly. So there's the Super Bowl rewind. On this date, Super Bowl 10, Pittsburgh over Dallas, 21-17. How much of a factor will Rob Gronkowski be in Sunday's game against the Chiefs? We'll tackle that next on SB Nation AM.
SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
You know, it wasn't that long ago when the Patriots were in the Super Bowls against the Giants. It was like either the absence or the playing availability of Rob Gronkowski was the biggest factor in the game, right? When it was coming to these big games. Gronkowski, for the last number of years, has been a very important cog in the Patriots offense. But I wonder in this game against Kansas City, with the emphasis on Julian Edelman, with the emphasis on James White, with the ability to run the ball with Sony Michel, how much will Rob Gronkowski be a factor against the Chiefs, especially if Eric Berry plays? Gronkowski had three catches the last time they met against the Chiefs in Foxborough. And I know we don't look at the stats of a week six game and think you're going to see a trend. But those three catches were gigantic in that game against the Chiefs. He had a 42-yard reception. I think he had a 39-yard reception near the end of the game that set up the game-winning field goal. Three catches, he had 97 yards against the Chiefs. So he doesn't have to have 7, 8, 9, 10 catches in a game. Only unless, of course, the Patriots offense notices that that is the best way to move the football, because the Patriots will run the ball if they have to, throw the ball if they have to, use the tight end, not use the tight end, use a variety of different runners, whatever they got to do to beat you. But if Eric Berry plays in the game, it's going to be interesting to see a diminished role for Rob Gronkowski. And he also, of course, he's hinted at retirement possibly at the end of the season. I hate to say this. I'm going to miss him a lot. When he's gone, I'm going to miss him. I haven't really seen a lot of him this year. He hasn't had the huge Rob Gronkowski presence that I usually get from him.
The Patriots haven't seen a whole lot of him this year,
right,
either.
Exactly. So, but I'm going to miss him. I hope he does some fun post-season, post-career work.
You know what he needs to do? He needs to not retire. Just wait and join the Raiders 2 years from now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
That would be amazing.
That would be amazing. He did say he won't play for any other quarterback but Tom Brady. That's very limiting, Rob Gronkowski, at 29 years old. That's very limiting. But nevertheless, it'd be interesting to see how much of a factor he is in this game. Like I said, three catches doesn't seem like a lot in the first game against Kansas City, but boy, all three were gigantic. So we'll see. But, you know, it's a little odd. We've had Super Bowls with the Patriots where Gronkowski's availability has been the kind of the thing,
the question mark,
one of the major talking points,
yeah,
right? Whether he misses, where he's missed the game or whether he's in the game. You would say, well, the Patriots, this is what they're going to do without Gronk, or this is what they're going to do with Gronk. And this Super Bowl, it's more about, okay, the Patriots are running the ball really well with Sony Michel, James White, he's catching the ball out of the backfield. Julian Edelman is the target now, the go-to target for Brady. Here's a number of different things the Patriots are going to do offensively, defensively. They got to shore up this and that and whatnot. Patriots defense has got to find a way to contain Mahomes out of the scramble. They're good at making those kind of adjustments. The dangerous thing for Kansas City, and again, I don't put a lot of stock in a Week 6 game. The dangerous thing for Kansas City is you've played the Patriots already this year, and the Patriots are really, really good when they get you a second time. Even if they beat you the first time, they're even better when they get you the second time. Maybe better at the second time than you are in the second time against that game. But Gronkowski, we'll see, coming up on Sunday in the AFC title game, SB Nation AM.